Hello, everybody, and welcome to Backstage Gaming, dramatic takes on your favorite games. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dylan.
And we're here again. It's Thursday. We managed to record a Thursday episode this week.
Oh my
Sorry
God,
about...
we're back again.
Yeah. It's... Oh my God, we're back again. I did that earlier. I don't remember the context of it, but I sang that at my fiance, and she just looked at me like I was crazy. Which, to be fair, I shrieked Backstreet Boys lyrics at her.
I can see this playing out in front of me right now at this very second. I can see the exact look on her face.
I'm sure you can.
She has given me that look many a time.
But anyway, this is our podcast about video games, not about Chris being destroyed by his loved ones.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. Hey, Dylan, what are we talking about this week?
So the idea I had in the term I'm going to... Sorry. All right. So the term I was going to use for this concept, and there's probably like an actual term for it, but fuck it. I'm referring to genre bashing, which I got from the concept of art bashing, in which an artist, to create a picture, uses many different references from many different pictures. And if Dakota were here, he could give an even better... description.
Yeah, I know that he's referred to photo bashing
which is where someone, in
digital art, you like, you know, paste in a picture of a mountain and then paint over it, like use that on your screen in Photoshop or whatever your software is as a guide for your painting.
Yeah, I meant to say photo bashing, but not to the point of like, I don't want to say plagiarism, but like, you know, the whole thing about photo bashing is that like, yeah, you can kind of get what you were going for, but people who have a trained eye will kind of tell that it's fake.
They'll be able to see it, yeah. That's I've heard not... Dakota complain about photo bashing in art he's seen before.
Right, right. That's not exactly what we're touching on. I mean some more in the sense of like a synthesis of different genres, kind of a potpourri or a genre stew. Mashup's
so
a good
term. What put this idea in your head?
So I've been playing a lot of Zelda recently because we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I've recently been playing Twilight Princess for the first time, in 14 years.
Yeah.
I think Twilight Princess is the first Zelda game I ever beat, and it's also one I have not revisited since I beat it. But I always knew I'd come back to it one day, and I guess a couple days ago was that day. I think something that made me excited to play Twilight Princess was I was in this starting... So, for people who don't know, Zelda's a franchise. I should hope you know what Zelda is. But,
If you don't know what Zelda is, I don't know why you're listening to this show. Welcome, I'm glad you're here, but
like,
I'm confused as to how you found us.
Right. There's a very manic energy for this episode.
Yeah.
Zelda Ocarina of Time came out in 98 and everyone was like, oh man, this is the greatest video game of all time. And then Majora's Mask came out and people didn't get it at the time, but now people love it. And then Wind Waker came out and everyone was like, what the fuck is this? Ocarina of Time was like this dark masterpiece and fucking kiddie cel-shaded graphics. So like Wind Waker was kind of perceived as something a little too kiddy, a little too... It wasn't quite growing up with the audience.
Though, as I understand it, and maybe this is just like the people that I talk to, but in the circles I move in, Wind Waker is much beloved now.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it was beloved when it came out.
I loved it when it came out, but yeah, it suffered a little bit from... And I think it suffered because like it was the GameCube, PS2... Xbox era, and games were still pushing on that ever difficult trek towards photorealism, and Nintendo said, nah.
And not for nothing, I started playing Wind Waker again, too, and that game's look has aged sublimely.
Oh, it's so good. It still look like, even without the HD remake, it still looks so
right.
good.
Like, some of the models, you can tell, like, oh, that looks untextured, because, like, I guess this is the hell I live in now, where I pay attention to that kind of thing. but all the same, it's still, like, it uses abstraction to its benefit. But that's not what we're talking about. Twilight Princess was kind of Nintendo, I don't want to say apologizing for Wind Waker, because people love Wind Waker, but it was more of them trying to get that goodwill back from people who loved Ocarina of Time and maybe loved Majora's Mask, who felt a little jaded at Wind Waker. And so to get back to the original topic of conversation, the impression I always got from Twilight Princess as a kid was, oh, it's like they're aping the style. It's like they're borrowing from the style of, like, the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies, because, you know, those were huge in the early to mid-2000s, and I would say even now. But kind of going back to the game again, I'm looking at, like, a lot of the character designs in, like, the starting area, Ordon Village, and I'm like, these characters look like something vaguely out of, like, a Chambara movie, like a samurai movie, like something maybe not Kurosawa-esque, but, like, Chris, do you remember the designs of some of the villagers in the in Twilight Princess?
There's a lot of, like, big, like, I can't think of the Japanese word for it, but, like, the big sash belts.
Yeah.
And, like, it, yeah, I'd never thought of it in the context of, like, it coming out so kind of soon after the Lord of the Rings movies made their huge splash.
Yeah.
But, like, you're not wrong. It does have kind of a Peter Jackson vibe to it.
Yeah, they very much were trying to tap into that. And it's one of the reasons I was super excited for it as a kid. Also, I guess, like, not to get too off topic, but Final Fantasy XII also came out around the same time. And that kind of went from, like, the more tropical anime aesthetic of Final Fantasy X to, like, something that's, like, this weird halfway cross between Jackson and Lucas.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to Twilight Princess, so you kind of have this Chambara aesthetic with the villagers. They all look distinctly Japanese, wearing clothing from that genre of samurai flick. And even the premise kind of has, like, that, a bunch of kids from the village get kidnapped by Bokoblins, which are these goblins. But, like, the goblins kind of look like, you know, mountain bandits from a samurai flick.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at their designs, they have, like, the clothing. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. I like what they're doing with this. And Chris, I know that you definitely remember, like, the moments of Twilight Princess where they start to ape Westerns.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, there's like, one of the most memorable moments of the game for me is, like, when you go through a literal ghost town to rescue someone. And it's an old school Western shootout.
Yeah, and it's playing, like, it's not straight up music from the Good and the Bad and the Ugly soundtrack, but that is 100% it's 100% the vibe that they're going for. It's got, like reed whistle and, like, rhythmic kind of, like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun kind of drumming going on. And it's very much, like, wanting to put you in the mindset of, like, ain't room in this town for both of us kind of vibe.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm excited to play through Twilight Princess again, because I'm looking at, like, this kind of marriage of styles, and I want to see, A, if they keep that momentum going throughout the game, because I remember Twilight Princess having a lot of low points for me, even as a kid, but, like, also just, like, I always remembered it being kind of Tolkienian, or Peter Jackson's version of Tolkienian, but it seems like they're really just it's this grab bag of everything a middle schooler would find cool, aesthetically. Like, Westerns are cool, samurai flicks are cool, and, you know, like, they're drawing from, like, different cultures' idea of, like, what a lone traveler traveling the world would be.
Yeah, they paint Link as, like, in different moments as, like, medieval knight, as Ronin, as cowboy.
He's a samurai cowboy ranger, and that's the coolest.
I have my next D&D character.
Yeah, like, straight up.
Yeah, that honestly is putting me now in mind in a slightly different way, but not inherently, I have been playing Final Fantasy VII for the first time. Not the remake, the OG game, or at least the Switch port of it. And boy howdy, you want to talk about a grab bag.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Like, aesthetically, Final Fantasy VII is in this weird place where, like, it is at once perfectly consistent, but also fucking wild. Because, like, it starts out in this, like, I would say Midgard is kind of steampunk.
I always called it diesel punk.
Diesel punk is more accurate, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you start out in this city full of, like, pipework and rust and grime, and that's the world that you're in for the first, like, 5 or 6 hours of the game. And then it opens up into, like, this big, kind of more standard fantasy-looking open world. Like, the next town you come to after leaving Midgard is, like, cobblestone streets and, like, shingled roofs. And it looks like
something straight out of Final Fantasy IX, for example, or Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah. And then you go on, and the next town you come to, or at least the next town I've come to, has a big fuck-off railgun pointing out into the sea, I think. I think it's meant to be a gun.
It is a gun. I think it's called the Sister Ray.
Yeah, but you also have a moment where you have to, like, climb a fucking, like, electrical tower to get to it. And, like,
yeah.
It's such a hodgepodge of aesthetics, but yet somehow they make it feel cohesive.
Yeah.
But that's also aping the fact that Final Fantasy VII has an absolute hodgepodge of game mechanics going on, too.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to Dylan about this, like, and this is 100% a side effect of the fact that they were like, it's 3D now. We can do cool 3D shit. So while the main crux of the game and, like, the combat is classic Final Fantasy, you also get a motorcycle combat set piece where you're having to, like, negotiate where you are on the road and hit people off their bikes. And then you get a set piece where you have to, like, precision platform using the help of a dolphin up onto a radio tower.
I was hoping you'd mention that.
Yep, it's
also
weird.
Don't forget the moment immediately before where you have to give a girl CPR because she nearly
drowns.
And,
like, that's as far as I've gotten, so maybe I hope there's more coming.
Let's see. So I think you've seen the snowboarding minigame, right?
I've seen it, but I haven't gotten there yet.
That's much later in the game. And then, like, a couple hours after that snowboarding minigame, you're climbing a mountain and you have to play a minigame where you keep your body temperature up.
Oh my god.
There's a submarine shooting minigame where you're piloting a submarine and you're maneuvering around other submarines and you gotta fire torpedoes at them. There's a lot. There's a rail shooter. I forgot there's a rail shooter in Final Fantasy VII.
But that's something that, like, I'm a big fan of that kind of thing in games. Of, like, it doesn't always work, but when a game is able to, like, take a moment and, like, just introduce some new mechanics that better emphasize that moment. Like, I've told you about this recently, but I've been playing Dream Daddy, which is the dad dating simulator, and it's full of mini games like that. I know I told you about this before, but there's, like, one of the first interactions you have with one of the other dads turns into you and him both bragging about your daughters, but it plays like a Pokemon battle.
Right, right. You did tell me about
that. Which
is
great. And then in my run currently, I then went on a dad date with this guy to a local music concert, and I had to go to the bathroom beforehand. And then to get back to him, there was, like, a little, like, run away from the mosh pit, like, grid platforming game, which was fucking great, and I lost at it, but it was really fucking fun. And so I really like that's another thing where a game like a dating sim or a game like a turn-based RPG, you get these moments where, like, it's not as much aesthetic mashup, but it's gameplay mashup, where, like, the motorcycle thing could have just been a cutscene,
right,
in Final Fantasy VII, but they chose to make a little mini game out of it and keep it player controlled.
You have no clue how fucking psyched I got when I was 12 years old.
Oh, I'm sure.
The motorcycle mini game, and then all of a sudden the game cuts to 60 frames per second, fully rendered. Oh, this is an actual game I can play.
It was 60 frames per second on its original release?
Yeah, on the PS1, yeah.
Holy shit, I had no idea. That's impressive.
It's really cool.
That's wild. But, like, that's the kind of thing where, like, a dating sim, they could have just made that, like, if you made the right choice or not, you will get back to your date or not. But they were like, nah, let's make it this, like, beat the clock, run away from the mosh pit, don't lose all your HP by running into other rowdy concert goers minigame. And I love that. I thought that was such a cool way of, like, making this moment feel like a unique moment in the game and making you remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's another, like, again, that's a slight deviation from the kind of genre mashup, but it's a way that games have of, like, emphasizing a moment in a similar way.
Man, video games are cool.
Video games are fucking great. I love them. Was there anything else that you had on, like, your original thought? Since, like, I kind of got us away from your prompt.
Twilight Princess was the big one, but I also was thinking if I needed to whip out another example. The first Devil May Cry, and we talk about this one a lot, but it's still interesting to me. And the thing that drew me to it originally was that, to repeat this for the 1,000th time, Devil May Cry was originally a Resident Evil spinoff. So it's kind of got, like, this Resident Evil structure to it, but it's a Resident Evil game that takes place in a Castlevania-esque demonic castle. And then on top of that, unlike Castlevania or Resident Evil, it's got elements of a beat-em-up and, like, fighting game, like, ideas of combos and juggling.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it created its own genre, so, like, it's kind of weird to go back to today if, like, you're going from Devil May Cry 5 to Devil May Cry 1. But if you go from any of these, if you go from Castlevania or Resident Evil or, hell, even Street Fighter is not the best example, but, like, Marvel vs. Capcom to Devil May Cry, be like, whoa, what? This is a thing people made? This is crazy, dude. This is how people talked in the early 2000s, right?
It's true. I was there. Yeah, I mean, I think another game that came to my mind on this kind of topic, something like pick your poison, any game with a cast of characters for you to choose from. Like, this is where you get a lot of mileage in, I mean, fighting games, MOBAs.
Odin Sphere having a character that just turns the game into a side-scrolling shooter.
Yeah, things like Overwatch, class-based shooters. Any game like that is such a wellspring for the creatives to be like, this character is going to be like, all right, this character is a cowboy with a robot arm. This character is a straight up ninja. This character is the fucking Iron Giant, because you can't tell me that's not what Bastion in Overwatch is based on.
Chris, you're just talking about FF7 again. Here, we have a talking dog. Here's a black guy with a gun for an arm. Here's a samurai dude, except his sword is really fucking big.
Yeah, or like, I've been fucking getting hyped for Guilty Gear Strive.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a bandit with a fire gun. This guy is literally just a vampire. This guy fights with his shadow. This lady is a pirate captain who fights with the creatures of the deep. Like, this guy's a ninja and also used to be the president. Like,
he resigned?
I don't know.
That lore makes me sad.
I honestly don't know. But, like,
no, you're good.
That's another area where, like, you can wind up with a lot of very generic feeling characters. Like, if you look at, and I'm not saying this to shit on Street Fighter, but, like, a lot of characters in Street Fighter are some variation on this person does martial arts. I mean, here's the thing.
No,
I'm
sorry,
sure there are people beyond that.
I literally just thought of Blanka. No,
yeah,
no,
and
like,
that's fair.
The Street Fighter characters are comparatively very generic when you put them next to Guilty Gear or King of Fighters.
Yeah, like that, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, there are exceptions to that, 100%. But, like, Street Fighter tends to be slightly more grounded.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it is, to some degree, a little bit of a missed opportunity when you look at something like Guilty Gear and how completely wild and how completely, like, from entirely different genres those characters can be drawn.
Yeah.
And still feel like they belong in this over-the-top world.
Chris, have you ever heard of the fighting game Evil Zone?
I have not.
Oh, fuck, we gotta talk about Evil Zone.
Okay, why do we have to talk about Evil Zone?
So, Evil Zone is not a good fighting game. Evil Zone is a fighting game on the PS1. It's a 3D fighting game. It's not a particularly good fighting game, from what I understand.
oh boy, those sure are some 3D fighting game PS1 graphics.
Oh my god, you looked it up? Let me...
Yep. Like, it's not as bad as... It's honestly better than I was expecting.
Right.
Like, those character models are not terrible.
It's a very... I mean, I, as someone who likes the PS1's graphic style...
I have a soft spot for it, too. That's not gonna stop me from saying that it's jank. But,
oh,
like,
it's super
this
jank.
This is comparatively much better looking than I was expecting it to be.
Hmm. But, like, the thing is, like, every character is, like, the main character of their own anime. And so, in between, like, when you play the story mode, in between every match you have, there's, like, an episode preview. And, like, you know, detailing the plot of the next fight. And each character has, like, I think each character has their own, like, anime opening.
Really?
I can't remember if they do. I want to say they do.
That's fucking great.
But I'm not positive. It's not animated, but, like, it's to evoke the feeling, like, you're tuning into an
that.
Anime. And it's really fun. I cannot tell you if the game is, like, good. Even, like, in a let-me-turn-my-brain-off-and-just-enjoy-this-for-what-it-is kind of way. I can't tell you that.
Sure.
But I can tell you that, like, a lot of this game's presentation is really cool to me.
I love that. No, and now we've come full circle to me thinking again about the thing we talked about a long time ago at this point, but about how BlazBlue, the fighting game, mm-hmm. at its core is, like, mechanically tries to feel like a shonen anime full of people with unique power sets by making every character play
completely
with
different.
Their own completely unique mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's kind of at the heart of this, too. It's all of these games have the thing in common where they're trying to draw on different sources and incorporate them in different ways. And I love that. And I think that, like you said earlier, games are fucking cool. I love it.
Yeah. And I wasn't thinking of this tweet I retweeted when I suggested this episode title or this episode theme, but at Fire Holly, I'm assuming that's her name because instead of an O, there's a 9, tweeted, Final Fantasy is a series about combining Star Wars, Dungeons & Dragons, prog rock, and anime into something even cooler than all of that.
Yeah, honestly,
yeah.
Not wrong.
And... Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot, I feel like there's a lot of different ways we tackle this idea, but...
Yeah, but at its core, putting two things that are cool together, probably gonna be cool.
Yeah, might not necessarily be in good taste. For example, I cannot tell you that Sonic Adventure 2 has a good story. I can, however, tell you that aesthetically, Sonic Adventure 2 Battle rocks my socks.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know what else rocked my socks? This episode.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of Backstage Gaming. We'll talk to you again next week. Until then, remember that if you like our show, the most helpful thing you can do is to tell your friends and family about it and to leave a review on iTunes. Leave a rating. Tell people. You got probably somebody in your home that can't leave right now. They're probably starting to get bored. Play a podcast for them. Choose ours. Also, be sure if you want to know more about us or want to reach out to us directly, check out our website, bsgpod.com. It's got bios, it's got info, it's got a contact form, it's got everything you need about us. And that site, again, is bsgpod.com.
Before I plug the social media, I want to thank Chris for allowing me to plug Sonic once again.
At this point, I'm convinced that if you don't do it at least every 3 episodes, you will die.
Oh, let me tell you, the last time I tried doing that, I got pangs of pain. Anywho, if you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, where our handle is @BSG_cast. And, you know, if you want to talk about the things we present, maybe you have a game that's close, near and dear to your heart that combines all of these different genres into a nice pulpy smoothie. You should tell us what that is, and if you want to catch our attention, you should use the hashtag BSGPod. Also, huge thanks to our friend Brendan French for the key art he has provided our show. If you dig his stuff, you can check him out at his Squarespace, brennan-french.squarespace.com. That is brennen-french.squarespace.com. You can also find him on instagram.com/BrennanFrenchArts and on Twitter, where his handle is @Brennan_French.
Thank you also to our friend BioQuery for the use of our theme song, Dot Sound Radio Volume 1 Instrumentality. He's a great musician and composer, and if you like our theme song, you should check out his other work. You could do that by going to soundcloud.com/BioQuery, that's soundcloud.com/BioQuery, or by searching for BioQuery on Spotify. Thank you also to the HP Video Game Podcast Network for having us on the network. It's a network full of video game-related podcasts, and if you like our show, you'll probably like some of theirs. So go check them out. They're on Twitter at HPVGPodNetwork. And thank you, as always, to our patrons. It means the world to us that you support us. And if you out there are not a patron, but you like our show and you want to support us, consider checking out patreon.com/BSGPod to do that. Oh, we did it. We recorded.
We did it.
We did a Thursday. And we'll be back again on Monday. Until then, I love you.
I love you too.
Let's-a go! Oh my god.